don't have much to say. Thought I'd call you up anyway, just to try to show you the way that I feel today. Oh, I miss you, baby. I sure am on the road. Oh, ain't no need to say much more. Just the same old well-worn stranger that I was before. Seems like yesterday now.
Hello, it's Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. Arnold McCullough. As his website states, you may not know the name, but you certainly know the voice. Every summer, James Taylor and his wonderful band heads to Tanglewood for their yearly concert, and we jumped at the opportunity to see if we could speak to someone we had just seen on our London trip last year when we caught Phil Collins on his Not Dead Yet tour at Royal Albert Hall. We met up with Arnold in a town just outside of Tanglewood at his hotel over oysters and deviled eggs. Arnold got his start in the original touring production of the iconic musical Hair, and from there he carved out an amazing collaborative and solo career, becoming the Zelig of featured vocalists, having performed with Phil Collins, James Taylor, Aretha Franklin, Linda Ronstadt, and Bonnie Raitt, to name just a few, while also touring on his solo work. Arnold is a funny guy, and we had a great and fairly hilarious conversation. We think James Taylor said it best when he said, "Arnold McCullough is what's going on. That's always been the case, and it always will be." So here is our conversation with Arnold McCullough, recorded at the Hotel on North in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
What did we order? We ordered Beaujolais oysters and an order of steamers. And two orders of deviled eggs for right. Chucky.
Chucky's going to finish them all. I'm excited to have an oyster.
Yeah, and I don't need oysters.
They do come with like a horseradishy cocktail sauce. They have to,
well,
right?
Well, we hope so.
Have you ever had gefilte fish?
Yeah, I'm part Jewish.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's you said schmuck before, and I raised an eyebrow.
Sorry.
I'm 100%. Brother.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And what part of Jew are you?
What part?
How much percentage?
Feet?
Probably 6% easy.
Six? A yeah. Solid six?
A solid six.
Arnold McCullough
was raised by Melissa Manchester and her sister back in New York, and she was my first live touring gig and also the first record I ever sang on.
Was Melissa Manchester
record.
Really? Is she Jewish?
Is she ever?
Melissa Manchester. All right.
Yeah. And her sister, Claudia, and I sang backup for her. Huh. Her brother-in-law was conducting, so it was like a big family thing.
This was back in New York?
Well, New York, and then when I moved to L.A., I still continued to do some things. No, it was just basically New York, you're right. Because I remember I got dumped for being such a drunk.
Oh, really? I thought I almost dumped her on.
That's why you almost dumped him, or how?
That's almost why I dumped him.
Oh, okay.
No, he's just drunk in love. That's what he is.
Oh, that's
but I'm 94% Jewish.
94?
Really? No.
What's the other 6%?
Black.
Really? I'm 6% black.
I had no idea. I'm glad we're so diverse.
We're at the Hotel on North Street.
Yeah,
and it's a hotel.
Do you know what this used to be?
It used to be a factory.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing a factory, but...
I don't remember exactly what they told me. I remember getting the whole deal.
So how are you feeling today now that LeBron has moved on?
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm from Cleveland originally. Yeah, you know that, right?
I do.
That's why he
and
is.
And I live in Los Angeles, which is amazing. So
now you're a Los Angeles fan?
I'm in Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been in Los Angeles for 40 more years than I was in Cleveland.
So there's no ties there for you as far as
as far as
the team?
I would go there and live maybe just because it's so bloody cheap.
Yeah.
I could get a house there for $200,000.
But you're a Lakers fan.
I'm a Los Angeles sports fan. Yeah. I like Los Angeles teams.
So this is a good day for you.
It's a good day.
LeBron has started in your old
haunt.
I came first, and he followed
me.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that was part of the deal.
Quick question. What was this place before a hotel?
I want to say Bessie Clark. It was like a three-floor clothing department store.
Really? So it wasn't a factory or anything?
Bessie Clark.
Oh, interesting.
All right.
Cool. Thank you.
Clothing department store. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then more recently, it sounds like it was some kind of Chinese restaurant.
Spice Garden or something like that.
But, you know, interestingly enough, on the walls in the hallways of the floors are framed garments.
Interesting.
So now we know why.
Yeah.
And now this makes total sense because I noticed the framed garments today.
Back to LeBron, we're Celtics fans.
Yeah, I'm a Celtics fan. Of course.
So him leaving the Eastern Conference, Boston fans are psyched. I mean, I'm not so psyched that he's with L.A., but now we have a clear ride, or at least a clearer ride to the finals because LeBron's not in our division.
But he's not in Cleveland. Yeah. Do you think he's too old, though?
Well, how old is he? Is he as old as Chuck?
He's young, not as old as me.
Not as old as Chuck.
No, he's probably what? He's probably 40?
He's more like your age.
No, he's like 35.
He's probably mid-30s, yeah.
Mid-30s?
Yeah.
I'd say 34?
Yeah. I mean, he's still the best player in the league.
So. I have to say, when I play basketball with my son, who's almost 13, I'm terrible. He's pretty good. Mm. He calls me LeBron James.
LeBron James.
I think this guy might be one of the owners. Oh. No, he's got a bandage.
Ah, they're coming. They pointed us out.
You want to say hi?
I think they recognize Chucky.
They're going to be kicked out for recording in here and without legal permission.
We're really happy to be sitting here with you.
Well, it shows.
And thanks. And we can't wait to just get down into the deviled eggs. And
what does that even mean?
And the steam clams.
Something.
That sounds really gross.
It's a euphemism for talking about your career.
Don't explain it.
I'd rather talk about...
It's a terrible euphemism for his career.
The steamed clams and the deviled eggs.
Did you just say it's a euphemism for his career?
That's terrible. That's not nice.
That's not very nice at all. Good God.
And you need to start over, Ron. Yes, take two.
Take two. No. So
introduce the artist, Arnold, and tell us who we are talking to and why.
So Chuck is an acoustic guitar player.
I don't care.
He didn't care about that.
In all seriousness... We were in London in last November seeing Phil Collins and seeing him play. And seeing you there.
Yeah. I was there?
You were there.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, you did.
And you didn't sleep in that day. It was at the Royal Albert Hall in the end of November 2018.
17.
We're in 18 now.
2017.
Good point. November is in the future in 18.
Stay with us, Ron.
God.
We had a wonderful experience and we were there.
That's where I saw you then.
Yeah.
I was in the balcony.
I thought you recognized us.
I see everything.
He does.
We were talking to the wonderful Leland Sklar the next day. And
at the Royal Garden?
Yes, at his hotel. Anyway, so we thought, we've always been a fan of your work. We would love to talk with you as well. You were graciously...
He gave you my number. Did he connect us?
I don't remember.
I vaguely remember him connecting me to someone.
Okay, all right.
I think it was you.
Yeah, I think we kind of looped in with... We shared the episode with you with Leland, I think. He was on the email.
Okay.
But anyway, we know that you're here for another tour.
Yes.
And when I was looking into your career, I noticed that years ago, I mean, you've always been a singer, but years ago...
I was a dancer as well, years ago.
You were on Saturday Night Live, is that right?
Yeah.
And you got a phone call from a guy named James Taylor.
No, it wasn't just that easy. It was actually, we did a session. I clarified it because I'm writing a book, and I wanted to get my facts straight. So I called David Lasley, who is the man I was hired with. I mean, he actually called David's house. David and I are best friends. We had done Hair together, the Broadway musical Hair, but we were in a national touring company. And we were hired on the same day in Cleveland. David came down from Detroit. Because they had fired four people in the Chicago company that had begun the first national tour. And David and myself and a girl named Lynn Pitney and one other person were the four people that were hired of the 200 people that auditioned. I was the only black guy hired. I'm black.
Yeah.
And
94%.
And 94%. And it was a big write-up in the local paper that I had gotten.
This was 1970...
1969.
Okay.
And this is the first touring company?
First national tour of Hair.
Hair.
They had had sit-down companies in all the cities prior to this. Huh. So the Chicago company was the first one to move. And there was still a Seattle company. You know, various other cities. Toronto had their own company. And Donna Summers was in the one in Germany, you know. And so I was hired and went on the road and... Then David and I started working together in New York after we got off the road 2 years later. And we had done a session with James for a guy named Garland Jeffries. Mm-hmm. And David reminded me of all this. And the song was called Cool Down Boy. And James and David and I, and maybe Garland, were singing on the song. James loved the blend much. He said... You know, I've never had singers, and I've always wanted a couple of guys singing back on. This would be great, because David sings really high like a girl, and I sing a little less high like a girl. And it was perfect. We could sing above him and then have a really nice... But anyway, right after that session, we had done also Right Time of the Night with Jennifer Warnes on Saturday Night Live. So maybe he saw that as well. And he lost the number... Hmm. And a guitar player, a friend of ours, gave James the number again. Huh. And that's how...
Thanks to that guy.
Thanks to him. You know, we definitely got the call.
Yeah.
So we went to his apartment. He and Carly were living at 135 Central Park West.
Yeah.
We got there about noon, and we sat there until maybe 6 or 7 in the evening, singing the whole time, drinking water and singing, because it was so much fun. Because we knew the material, and we knew harmony, so we would harmonize with them on anything and just throw stuff in. And
you knew all the stuff?
Yeah, we knew the stuff, because we were fans. So it was just so organic and so natural.
He liked the blend when he heard you instantly.
Yeah.
When you started singing with him at 135 Central Park West, did you like the blend?
I did.
Did you feel what he felt immediately?
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Or did
for
it
sure.
take some.
David and I left there walking on air, literally, but we left there thinking, God, that was so much fun just singing with him. It was so much fun, and the blend was so good, and he's so easy, and he's so adaptable, he's so musical, and he likes, you know, because he's from a singing family, so he's used to singing harmonies, and he's used to. That family sound, you know, with Livingston and Alex and Kate. You know, someone actually said backstage the other night, you guys sound so good together. I said, it's because we're family. It's 40 years that I've been singing with this guy. I've sung with him and David longer than I've sung with anybody in my life, you know. So
I want to get back to Hair. That's such an iconic musical. Can you tell us a little about that tour? Do you remember, like, anything specific about it?
Oh, yeah, it was a huge, huge tour. We were flying on private planes or first class. I don't know what it was, but it seemed like it was just us on the plane back in the day. Hmm. They didn't pack planes full then. We were so extravagant. The guys would be wearing fur coats in the middle of summer and big, huge afros and girls in crazy vintage dresses. And we would come off the plane, and there would be crowds of kids to meet us. It was like being a Beatle, you know?
Right.
And... We would come to a city and get apartments, and we'd had steamer trunks, and we'd set up house with our set up our music, put our pots and pans away. You know, certain people cooked all the time.
It was like a traveling circus kind of thing going on?
More or less. And then from this big national tour, it dwindled down to bus and truck, where it was like two suitcases, and we were on a bus, not flying. And that's when I said, okay, time to get out.
Now, is that why you moved to New York? Was it about going into musicals?
Yeah, and I thought I'd go to New York and continue auditioning for musicals.
Did you go to acting school or anything in New York? Or?
I studied a bit. I never went to acting school.
I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York.
You did?
Back in the 90s, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That must have been good.
It was great. Yeah, they don't do musicals there, but I know a lot of people who are. One of them is on Broadway right now and Frozen right now. He's
really?
Yeah.
So you're a drama
king. No, I used to be. No longer. I'm a dramatic. Thank you for the king part. I like that. But no longer am I.
Now he's
the king
of a podcast.
Yeah, now I'm a podcast dude. But that's great. So from Hair, were you doing a lot of other singing, backup singing? Were you out to do your own thing before James called you? Were you just kind of dabbling in a lot of different things?
I was a It's so much. Backup stuff on a lot of records. I was part of the disco era. Mm-hmm. So me and David and Patty Austin and Ava Cherry and Ashford and Simpson and Gordon Grody and Luther Vandross, and all of us were in New York.
Hitting Studio 54?
No, singing on the records that were playing in Studio 54.
So you really had a vocalist, collaborator, backup, well, however you want to call it, a harmony expert, cutting your teeth on recordings before you launched into the touring world with these big acts.
Yeah.
To what extent do you think that has molded or has shaped the way you are on stage?
The theater background was vital, was really helpful in teaching me how to play to an audience, you know, and a lot of kids who were just backup singers didn't have that, you know, don't know how to work a crowd, you know, or play to a live audience. And so there was a lot of training there, but I didn't find it easy to do the audition process. I hated
audition process
it
is terrible
so much.
Usual.
Just walking into a room of a lot of people who were supposed to look and sound like you, they would be singing the same songs over and over. I'd hear the same songs. I would try to do something different and fresh. And, you know, I think I did a great job and didn't get a call back or got a call back and then didn't get the job, you know. And it was just humiliating and frustrating. And David and I said, let's put together a trio and just sort of start undercutting the scale payment and start singing for people like Melissa. And one of our first gigs was singing for Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Oh, really?
When they had that TV show.
I remember.
You're old enough.
I am. I watched it.
Well, we did the demos for all the music in the show. So we did the lead vocals for Tony, and then we created the backing vocals for Dawn.
Wow.
So, and that was done in New York, and then we sent it to L.A. And that was one of our earlier lucrative gigs.
Yeah.
Demoing stuff for Tony Orlando and Dawn. Those producers, Hank Medris and Dave Apple, were producing Melissa Manchester. And then, you know, we get on that record. And
when did you work with, I thought I saw you work with Linda Ronstadt.
Linda was later.
A little later.
After I had done James, after I'd done Phil, after I'd done Lyle Lovett, Linda was sort of like dragging herself on the stage, and I come along to sort of hang out with her because we had the same vocal coach. I actually got her the vocal coach that I have had. He died, but I turned Linda on to him, and he would fly places to work with her. And she thought she was in vocal trouble, but she had the most amazing, and still does have the most amazing voice. She liked my voice, and she liked the help I gave her vocally because I would warm her up sometimes. You know, it's so funny, Jackson. I have a vocal app, a warm-up app.
I saw that.
You saw that? Okay.
Yeah.
Jackson uses it. Bonnie uses it. Linda used it. But it's what I was taught, and I got James's first vocal coach.
This is a virtual vocal coach.
This is
Can we open it up while we're talking?
Yeah, sure. So this is
This is warm-ups. Hum, goo goo,
nung.
I think we should have Chuck do a couple of these.
So wait, what are these just...
And these are some more exercises. Lip trills.
These words are just vocalizations that you do?
Yeah, yeah.
Can we have Chuck do some lip trills right now?
Yeah, you can't pay me enough
to do
that.
Start slowly and remember to breathe.
Chuck can't
is that
do
you?
Lip trills, yeah.
Is that you speaking?
Chuck can't.
This is the very beginning exercise that I do practically as I'm lying in bed.
Oh, it's
just
my
to
app.
See where my voice
I created it.
Yeah, so it's his app on his...
And what is it called?
It's called Vocalese. This one Vocalese. Is Vocalese, too. And the other thing is that over time, I've added other stuff, interval training. And then I would bring in guest singers, Kathleen Grace, David Hussey, who used to be Ronald McDonald, and Rosemary Butler. Yeah.
So as long as we're on Linda, if I may, Jackson, I'll use first names.
You may.
Thank you, Chuck.
Sure.
Chucky.
And Chuck is about to roll his eyes because every episode I have to bring up Phil Collins for some odd reason.
Yeah, he does.
He just rolled his eyes. You're right.
I know.
Nothing against Phil Collins.
It was internal. It was like...
I know.
It's
automatic. Rolling them at Phil. He's rolling them at me talking about Phil. Yeah. But anyway, how did you guys meet?
Phil and I?
Yeah.
Leland. Once again, the artist had never had backing vocalists. Leland said, you need to call Arnold. And Phil called me and said, bring me yourself and two other singers. I said, done.
When was this?
1989.
So that was a serious tour?
Yes. Yeah. Serious Hits.
That had to have been quite a ride. A different type of music. And
so bizarre.
Why is it bizarre?
There was a horn section, which was new to me. There was the three singers. There were, you know, Phil was playing drums and singing. It was, you know, it was a whole different vibe. And he was really about the up-tempo stuff. And he was a big pop artist. And he was huge in Europe. You know, James has to really work Europe. But he's doing it. He's doing it. He's got it now. But Phil was like, he's a European artist anyway. So he was massive over there. And we played like the Glastonbury Festival with, you know, 300,000.
Wow.
And we did a festival with a sort of a Genesis Phil Collins combined thing.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, they just went nuts. And I got to sing on some of that stuff.
What comes to mind is something.
Follow You, Follow Me. I Can't Dance. There were so many other good ones.
Was it a huge production? Because certainly James Taylor's productions is pretty straightforward.
Every tour has been a different, amazing production.
I mean, certainly the last
one
we saw.
This is going to lead to all the knee injuries. What?
Yeah, certainly the last one we saw was very different because Phil had to sit down and couldn't play.
Yeah, but it was still a big production.
Yeah, a big production.
You didn't see all of it because we couldn't, I don't think they could hang it all.
Oh, really?
In Albert Hall. But it was a 96-ton show.
How would the collaboration work with you and Phil and the other artists?
Phil knew what he wanted, as do most artists. They know what they want to hear. And from time to time, what ends up being sort of ad-libs become parts as well.
So stuff that you would come up with?
So I'd throw in stuff, and he'd say, oh, I love that. Let's keep that in. Or we'd make it a part. You know, I would just sing something along with him, or there would just be another voice doubling him, you know.
So whether it's James it's or Bonnie or Phil or someone
whoever,
else.
It's a little bit of a collaborative creation.
I know we're going back and forth, but for tonight, you're chilling. Tomorrow, you have a concert. Tomorrow's the 3rd.
Yeah, it is. So July 3rd.
What do you
2018, Tanglewood.
What do you guys do now?
The summer home. Used to be the summer home of the BSO.
Still is.
But it's turned into a little bit more.
Yeah, it's more.
It's more of a concert venue now.
It's a beautiful place.
James started doing concerts there, and next thing you know, it's, you know, Flying Crows or Crashing Pumpkins or... It's
the Smashing Pumpkins.
That's what I meant.
Yes.
Yeah, the Smashing Crows and the Flying...
The Flying...
And the counting Pumpkins.
The Counting Pumpkins?
Some names are really good. Others are not so memorable.
It's you know what, though? What did James do to Tanglewood?
His wife worked with John Williams.
So, Smedvig.
Yes, Kim Smedvig or Caroline Smedvig,
yeah.
Who is now Mrs. James Taylor. She has this classical background and would insist that James sort of come to Tanglewood and play.
I always thought that was just, well, the Berkshires looked dreamlike on the count of that frosting.
Yeah.
And there was like this whole...
Don't believe in all the words.
1970s...
You mean it's not real?
Yeah, well, it's totally real. But it was long before the Tanglewood.
Yeah.
We want to...
Steve Gadd.
Oh, hi. Can we say hi to Steve Gadd?
Oh, we
no. No.
He's from Rochester. That's why I wanted to say hi to him.
So that's why you want to say hi to him?
He's sitting down to eat. Leave him alone.
Let him eat.
Let's bring the whole...
He doesn't want anyone to know he's from Rochester.
And
we're talking with Arnold.
You'd have to pay him a lot more than you're paying me.
I know. By the way, did you get the...
No, I didn't.
You didn't get it?
Get your ticket.
The check from you. The check from Chucky.
Yeah, it'll be from Chucky. That's right. That's how you know it's from me.
You know, speaking of checks and the amazing story of you becoming an artist that can really resonate with people, what you've done is kind of analogous to Leland and some other folks in sessioning and in, if that's right. Even a phrase, and live, is that you're recognizable, but not just by your presence and who you are on stage, but the voice itself. What I've found in doing this over just a few years is that you can't take the personality away. You can't take the fact that there's years of camaraderie working together. I don't care how good your voice is or what your chops are. It's a connection you have to people.
Yes, it's building that a sound.
Yeah. I guess what I was getting at, too, is that you've also done solo stuff.
Yeah.
I've been listening to it lately. I love it.
Really?
I'm a Witness fan.
Oh, Witness is a bomb, yo. It's the bomb. Witness.
I like Hard Times and Witness itself. I love the bluesy vibe there that I don't hear from you. In some other,
well,
like
I wanted
Phil.
To do stuff that I knew I could do, but people have never heard me do. And oddly enough, those songs were written years ago. They were written for a publisher's catalog. Mm. to pull songs for TV shows or whatever, you know.
Right.
Right after we did these songs, Hard Times was used for this cop show. But it was just really creepy because it was, they were battering ramming people's homes and, you know. But my song was Hard Times gonna come calling, you know.
But and people call that mailbox money too, right?
But not only that, I mean, sir, first of all, you're in the iconic musical Hair. You also have a song in the iconic movie The Warriors.
The Warriors.
Have you seen The Warriors, Ron? If you haven't.
Oh, my God. It's a classic.
It is awesome. Nowhere to Run.
Kids, 21-year-olds know that song.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a video game, I think.
Oh, really?
Then all of a sudden, I had this another, you know, resurgence of Nowhere to Run.
It was also, wasn't it just like the anniversary of The Warriors coming out, and they did this video of some of the original actors who were The Warriors walking around the same subways and going out to Coney Island.
Probably.
And like, yeah, and they had like,
what's his name?
I can't remember the name of the actors, but
there was,
I mean, you
the
can't,
guy who did Warriors at the Bottles Come Out.
Yeah, with the yeah.
Oh, was, that was scary.
He
yeah, it scared the crap out of me.
He was in Hair.
He was in Hair.
He traveled with you in Hair?
No, he was in one of the companies, but I knew him from back then.
You've been in some movies as an actor though.
Yeah,
some part. Yeah,
singing on camera. Well,
Chuck was an actor, you know.
I know Chuck's a star.
That's right. Thank you.
But
very much.
You were in.
What are you doing with your shirt?
Me, I'm just itching my boob.
That's nice.
Well, you asked.
You told me. And I love that you told me.
Well, you know.
Because I'm taking that down.
I always tell you the truth.
Can you put that on your app? Itching my boob. Itching my boob. Itching my boob.
Oh, stop saying that. It's really disturbing. I don't know why, but it is.
You say it really fast.
Yeah, just stop.
Itching my boob.
Okay, let's get back
on
top of
this.
So
this is a big ask.
Other than the Warriors, so I'm interested in the camaraderie between all the other singers who work across all these different either platforms or with different people. Is there like a brotherhood and a sisterhood there of people that you've kind of worked with
the
years?
Other backing vocalists that I don't know that didn't want to be my friend. You know,
how's that possible?
They knew who I was. I knew who they were.
Yeah,
but we. Just want to become friends. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, sometimes you have enough friends.
But then, yeah, you know, sometimes you get friend overload.
Exactly.
As James says, pesky friend buildup. I don't particularly care to hang with the band. It's a day off. I eat, sleep, and live with them the other days.
That's enough.
So it's enough.
Yeah, I get it.
You know,
I think it's healthy.
Fortunately, this is a nice restaurant, a nice hotel. So, you know, we'll all sort of pop in and out from time to time. And it's a small town.
Yeah.
But if we're all in New York or in Boston.
It's in different places.
It's like everybody's gone their own way, you know.
Yeah, right. Now, there is something intimate about this place and Tanglewood. So, you looking forward to tomorrow?
It's nice to be there.
Yeah.
But it's not like the first time I've ever been there. And it's. I feel like we're at the end of the tour almost.
Yeah.
Because it's the last U.S. date, and then we're going on to the U.K. and Italy.
Not that this is.
And 4th of July at Tanglewood is exhausting now.
Yeah. I mean, you must get up for the actual.
For sure.
And I can imagine saying
I walk out there and I see faces that I see every year.
And boom, the energy comes up.
Yes, I do. There are certain things I like about it, but.
Yeah, of course.
Looking forward to it, it's. It's like another day at work for me.
So then what is exciting for you right now?
The actual on-stage performance.
Yeah.
Arriving there and actually doing the show is what's exciting. And then after that, it's nice to get back and get to bed.
Right.
That's really exciting. Yeah.
You mentioned you're writing a book. Is it an autobiography?
It's more like a memoir.
Yeah? We talked to John Oates from Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
He was on a book tour. That he wrote himself too. Yeah, so he wrote an autobiography. And I'm always fascinated about sitting down and trying to pull in together all these memories.
It's hard.
Are you writing it with somebody? Or are you sitting down by yourself?
I'm doing it on my own. And then I've got a friend who is a writer and editor.
Yeah.
She works with Maria Shriver, and she's like really high end.
So she knows how to ask the questions.
She knows how to organize my thoughts,
yeah,
basically, and make it sound like a book or make it look like a, I mean, I read what she's written. I say, oh my God, it's sort of what I said, but she's
but
made
readable
it really, really readable. And
do you have diaries or anything like that where you took notes?
No,
or anything like that?
No.
So
I've
it's
got
all
nothing.
From memory.
I've always tried to douche it all out.
So it's a lot of conversation.
I'm having to call friends and ask.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, the book is mainly about my life in recovery from my drug addiction, which was, you know, 20 years, first 20 years of my life. And then now I'm clean for 34 years. So
congratulations.
There's a long history of
34
that.
34 years.
Yeah. There's a long history of drug using and then drug recovery. And interspersed is the music career.
Well, congratulations. And you talk about that in the book. Is that tough to do?
Oh, yeah. I talk about a lot of my life. And it's tough to do, but it's what I realize is that it's not foreign to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stuff I did and some of the things I felt and some of the way I acted, and it's not so foreign.
Right.
You know, we've all heard and seen it, and some of us have even experienced a lot of it. So
yeah.
I'm just going to write it and let it go and see what happens, you know. But there's a lot going in there.
When is it coming out?
I don't know.
Oh, you're still in the middle of writing.
I'm just like, I'm 88 pages in, which is pretty good.
Talk about songwriting or performing that is the therapy that people need for their soul, for anything they're going through, to get a memoir out. I can't relate because I haven't done something like that, but I would imagine there's some relief off the shoulders already.
It's terribly cathartic, yeah. It's very cathartic. It's bringing up stuff and then I'm letting it go.
Right.
Putting it on the page.
Yeah.
But do you notice during the process you feel better about things?
I feel a lot, and I just accept the fact that I'm feeling it, you know. And of course, we've got people to talk to work through those feelings. But it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's healthy. It's very healthy.
How does the show, or how does the tour help with that, or does it not?
It gives me the free time in a hotel room to just sit and be quiet and collect my thoughts and then remember stuff, you know. It's easier to write on the road than it is at home. On the road, a lot comes up because it's reminiscent of some of the old behavior.
This is 40 years of your life. This is your adult life that you're looking back on, and you're living it on the road.
Right, but I also incorporated my upbringing in Cleveland, and you know, my father dying when I was a year old, and my mother remarrying, and my stepfather, and my brother being born, and all that stuff is pretty interesting as well. But you know, like I said, letting go of it is not so scary anymore, because I believe everybody's got their shit. You know.
Oh yeah.
Look at Chucky.
Yeah, no, look
just
at me.
Take one look.
Well, I can't wait to read it. Do you have a title for it yet?
I'm calling it What It Was Like.
What It Was Like.
Yeah.
I like it. I love that you did Live at the Baked Potato, the album you did.
That was cool.
I judge my musicians a lot of the time
by how
they sound live. And it's a great album live.
Yeah, I didn't fix much of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But that's where the chops are. If you can play live, then that's what I love to hear.
Producers have always said, if you could capture what you do live on record, that's what people want. So I've done two live albums.
Speaking of the Baked Potato live and your tour, I'm really excited to see you in August in New York. You're the same person, but a different feeling that you experience on stage when you're lead. Your album, Back to Front?
Back to Front.
Was pretty
Which
cool
was an
in
article
sense.
Written about me in England, and they say back to front a lot, you know.
They say that in England?
It's an English saying.
Yeah, back to front.
But the meaning certainly is from the backup singer to the lead.
To the lead, yeah.
And the lead vocal, you did a Genesis tune.
Yes.
It's a beautiful song that no one really knows.
Yeah.
Hold On My Heart. And then you did a couple of Bonnie tunes.
I did Nick of Time, which I sing with her live when we do the Bonnie and James thing. I sing the last verse of it. She's very generous. She lets me do that with her. It's an honor.
But have you heard this album, Chuck? Where he's the you're the lead? I like it. It's basically
I do two
a cover
James
album.
Songs.
But you're so intimately involved in those artists.
Yeah, and it's just stuff that I sang back up on that I've always wanted to sing the lead for. Because I love the songs, you know.
Do you get that? Back to front?
I get it. Yes, thank you.
He's no dummy.
Yes, thank you very much.
Just want to make sure
Arnold,
he was on board.
I appreciate it. So I'm glad someone finally said it.
Back to, because he's
he
a backup
got
singer.
It before you said it.
Yeah, I did. I got it before you even said it.
Oh my God, there's three well, more double legs. I'm so excited.
We're getting you pumped up for the yeah, for the show tomorrow.
We are. Man. It's all about oysters, deviled eggs,
and big microphones.
And big microphones. We really.
That should be the title of your book, actually.
Big microphones.
No, Arnold, oysters, deviled eggs, and big microphones. And if I want a piece of the pie, if you call it that.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to want a piece of something.
Oh, baby.
The lady who I'm writing, well, who's ghosting it, I guess, she said, you're going to need a lawyer. You're going to really need a lawyer.
After the first 5 minutes of talking to you?
After reading this
after
book.
Reading
right,
the book.
Right.
She said, you just out so many people. You just talk about so many people in their lives. Because I'm just putting it all in there. That's not holding anything back.
Interesting.
Well, you know, we just met you, and we really appreciate sitting with you, Arnold. We can tell that there's such an honesty, a realness, a genuineness about you that translates to the music.
Plus a great sense of humor.
And what a cool thing to sit and talk.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
High five, my Jewish brother.
I'm a Catholic.
A Catholic. Nice to meet you.
No one's wrong. No one's right. Both of us think we're sorry tonight. Wanna fight about it? Chose all sides, held our ground. Communication is all broken down. Can't lie about it. Oh, darling, I miss you so. Only time will tell where your heart will go. I'm sitting here soul searching, playing with the broken arrow. Is it worth it? Feeling so blue, sitting here soul searching, got my focus straight and narrow. Private tunnel, wonder.
Check out Arnold's music and find out where he is singing next at arnoldmccullough.com. He will be touring again with Phil Collins through October. Go to AboveTheBasement.com where you can join us on Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. And remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. How would you like to join us in creating great conversations that inspire and connect? Patreon is a membership platform that provides a way for creators like us to build relationships and provide exclusive experiences to subscribers or patrons. We've been self-financed since we got off the ground in June of 2016, but in order to continue to fully invest all we can in each episode, we need your patronage. For more information, please go to patreon.com/abovethebasement.